Energy Singularity, the Event Horizon podcast, a podcast where energy blockchain visionaries discuss the future of energy. Join me, Kevin O'Donovan, as I chat with some of the world's leading visionaries to take a realistic view as to what's really going on. In the series so far, we've looked at the overall state of blockchain in the energy industry, the technology, the impact of energy policy and regulation. And in episode 4, many of the elephants in the room got called out. Now, given the dose of realism we've been dishing out so far, you might be starting to wonder if there is any future for blockchain in the energy industry. Well, there is. And to prove it, over the next 3 episodes, we're going to hear from people who are out there today building businesses in the energy industry using blockchain as a key enabling technology for their solutions. For episode 5, I'd like to welcome Maria McCavanagh, Chief Operating Officer at Verve. Welcome, Maria.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Maria, for people who may not know you, can you do a quick introduction?
As you say, I'm the CEO at Verve, where we're on a mission to bring energy bills down to zero. But we'll come on to that shortly. Before this, I've an engineering background. So I was an electrical engineer originally, spent a little bit of time in telecoms consulting. But the most of my career before Verve was at a kind of big engineering company where I had originally quite a technical role, but then moved into a commercial role where I basically owned a sales territory with a range of customers from consumer electronics to defense and aerospace. And that's kind of how I came across Peter, who's the founder of Verve.
And what are you looking to do at Verve?
There's two main things that we're trying to do. So we basically want to bring energy bills down as low as possible, hopefully to zero one day, and also reduce the carbon. And we do that through delivering amazing customer experiences. So I think when we think about climate change, you know, we have this small group of people, and as much respect as I have for Extinction Rebellion, it's a small group of people who say aren't going to take flights or, you know, aren't going to buy imported food or whatever else. And unfortunately, having a small number of people drastically changing their lives isn't going to have as big an impact as if we have everyone taking a few inches towards it. So I really think that from the energy element, if we can deliver a customer experience that results in people using less carbon, people, becoming greener in the way they live their lives, then that's going to have an even greater impact on climate change.
Now, one of the things I've seen over the years is that it is really hard to get us humans to change our behavior. You know, we all claim we want to be more sustainable, do the right thing. But then we make excuses that we don't know where to start. It's all too complicated. So we do nothing. So how do we fix this?
It's good to start off by talking a little bit about smart meters because people are quite familiar with them. So your smart meter sits in your home and it'll sample the data, so the voltage and the current coming into your home, that energy data, about once every 10 seconds. And that's how it tells you, you know, how much energy you've used that day in kilowatt hours. However, that isn't actually great insight to give someone if they actually want to change their behavior. And so what we realized was that by sampling the data coming into the home, so sampling of the current and the voltage much more quickly, with that big data set, you can apply AI, which gives the customers much greater insight into their homes so they can actually take some action. So with our Verve Hub, it sits next to your meter or smart meter, doesn't matter which one you have, samples the current and voltage really, really quickly, and then on an app will show you which appliances are on in real time and how much they're costing. So that allows you to see, you know, it was the washing machine that's making up whatever percentage of your electricity bill. So that's where we started. That was our core product at the beginning.
So how do you distinguish the different appliances? Here in my home, how do you figure out it was our heat pump was on or the washing machine or me putting on the kettle for a cup of tea?
The way it works, like the analogy I like to use is if you think about, having a room with, 10 people in it and one microphone and you record all of them talking at one time, each of their voices could be separated using speech pattern recognition, which uses a machine learning technique. And it's because each of those voices will have a very different set of characteristics. So, you know, between your voice and my voice, I think anyone listening, I hope, would be able to pick which one was the woman and which one was the man. But, you know, obviously there are more intricacies than that. But basically, the frequency of our voice is similar to the frequency of the signal of the appliance. And even, you know, the amount of power it's drawing and its behavior on the transient. So the transient is the very beginning, like when it's turned on, that first part of the signal. A toaster will look very different from a kettle, and that'll look very different from a food processor and an electric shower. So that's basically how the technology works.
Verve also has an energy trading platform for peer-to-peer energy trading. So why did you decide to go down that path?
Being in the energy space from, this is like back in 2009 when the technology was patented in order to disaggregate the appliances. What we realized with our devices in a set of homes, so there was actually a very specific trial that we were involved in, and it had 100 homes, and these homes all happened to have solar panels on the roofs and domestic battery storage as well.
Okay.
Because we were monitoring the consumption of the homes, we could see that they were actually only consuming about half of the electricity that they were generating. And in the UK, you actually get 50% deemed export, and you're paid 5 pence per kilowatt hour for that energy. So a lot of the time it's not actually measured. It's just, okay, we know you have a solar panel, it generates this much. You'll get 5p per kilowatt hour for 50% of that energy. And we thought, well, if they're getting 5p per kilowatt hour for this excess energy, but their neighbour next door is actually paying, say, 15 or 16p per kilowatt hour for their energy, wouldn't it be better if they were able to just sell the energy directly to the neighbour next door? And there was one particular kind of customer or user, I suppose, that we had a conversation with, and he made the comment that, oh, you know, it's just me and my wife, and we're generating loads of energy, but there's a young family living next door, and I'm sure they're really struggling because, you know, they've young children, they're both, you know, whether one of them is working or whatever. And, you know, I'd gladly just give them the energy, never mind charging them for it. So I think this whole thing of kind of community energy and, you know, people looking out for one another was all coming around at the same time. And we thought, okay, well, is there a way of pairing the generators up with the consumers directly without, you know, having to kind of go back to the grid to come back to the consumer again? With that, we basically applied for some government funding, and we're really lucky to be funded by BEIS, which is a department here in the UK, to create a simulated blockchain-based peer-to-peer energy trading system. And I've just jumped into the blockchain before you've asked me, and I know we're going to get on to it.
Well, let's jump straight in. So why did you look to use blockchain technology?
You know, it was whenever there was the hype was building around Bitcoin and things like that. Everyone was becoming more familiar with the technology. It was just the stars kind of aligned, because we were saying, well, if we want to trade excess energy from one home to another, we've got to have a way of recording those transactions. And if we were going to be that middleman, you know, if we were going to buy the energy from one person and then sell it to another one, then we're basically just becoming an energy company. And then you'd obviously have to take quite a large cut to be able to run the operations of that. And suddenly the 10p arbitrage that we had was going to disappear. So it was just this kind of golden opportunity that at the same time, you know, this ledger had been created and it was gaining a lot of traction in the space that would potentially allow us to record these transactions basically free without needing a middleman.
Now, in terms of building a business where blockchain can be an enabler, in this series so far, there's two big themes that keep reoccurring: that blockchain technology is still a bit immature, and the second one, regardless of the technology, there's a huge step change in regulation required to enable new energy markets, especially around peer-to-peer. Both of these came up again in episode 4 in Elephants in the Room. Ye at Verve are off out there building a business today. So how do you address these?
So we are lucky in that as a business, we have our core product offering, which is the Verve Hub, and we have run our blockchain work in the R&D arm of our business. So there are other companies where you know, the blockchain solution that they're building is their core business. I think they're open to a bit more of the risk due to the immaturity of the technology. So we're lucky in that our risk is kind of protected in that way, because we have kind of diversity in the portfolio of what we're building. That being said, it is the best solution right now for the, you know, energy trading element of our business. So we do have to address the fact that it is still immature. And you know, we currently are building on Ethereum, and that was the kind of best option for us. However, you couldn't trade energy peer-to-peer in real time on the Ethereum blockchain, because the cost of gas would be greater than the kilowatt, or the cost per kilowatt hour that you're trading. You know, these energy transactions are small. And so that's where we've come unstuck, and that's why it's, you know, really important to look at the new technologies that are emerging, the new blockchain technologies that are emerging that may be more suitable for energy trading. So that's part of it. And then to your second point on the regulation, I think that's the area of most concern for us, just simply because it's slow. I feel like in the UK, all the right noises are being made. And so you said that it's a, you know, a step change in regulation to kind of enable this, but there are a lot of rungs in the ladder to climb up that step. And I think the first rung is there. You know, there's a modification that's been raised by New Anglia Energy. So it's P379, if anyone wants to have a browse of it. But it would basically allow multiple suppliers behind the meter. Because when you think about it, like, Kevin, if you were going to sell me some of your energy, you would effectively be supplying to me. But right now, you can only have one supplier of energy, so it would be impossible. So it's these little steps that we have to take, the kind of first few dominoes that we have to knock down, but they are being knocked down. People from incumbents to disruptors are supportive of them being knocked down. The government have been talking about, you know, peer-to-peer trading, have been funding peer-to-peer projects since at least 2016 here in the UK. So I'm feeling very positive that the change will happen. But for small companies like ourselves, it's about ensuring that, you know, you don't go out of business waiting for it.
Yeah, that really is a harsh reality of today's startup world. How do I stay alive long enough? Now, Maria, you mentioned the pace of change in the industry, and we hear a lot about how new technologies are driving a lot of this. You're out there day in, day out. Do you see any real change in the energy industry? You know, is the culture of the industry changing in terms of openness to new ideas, new technologies, new talent?
Absolutely. I think it's changing across the industry. And a big part of that is that I think there's never been like a sexier time to work in energy. Everyone's really excited. I love working in this industry, and I don't think I would have ever chosen it like when I was leaving university, for example. So like even like 10, 15 years ago, it wasn't that exciting. But because technology is enabling such huge leaps forward, so the fact that the cost of solar panels is dropping so rapidly, the fact that battery storage cost is dropping so rapidly, you know, you can buy a domestic battery in IKEA now. You know, Tesla has done a lot to boost the kind of messaging and made batteries a bit sexy, you know. So I think it's got exciting, which is attracting really intelligent and, you know, young people into it. The fact that AI has become such a, you know, it's known now that AI is going to be required to transform our energy industry and help us fight the climate crisis. And so for that reason, the fact that you've got so many more people going into AI now, you've people retraining. So mathematicians and statisticians are, you know, doing masters and PhDs in machine learning and AI. You have this amazing talent pool that are all keen to come and help you solve the problem. And so because you've got this like kind of amazing talent pool coming forward and building their own startups and taking this, you know, agile approach to solving a particular energy problem, it could be a big one, it could be a small one. And we're seeing all these companies spinning out that are doing really well. And, you know, you're interviewing a lot of them in these podcasts. And that, I think, has then inspired the corporates to start spinning out their own. So a lot of the big incumbents will have incubation labs, or they'll even just have funds. So we were originally funded through Centrica's Social Impact Fund. So it was called the Ignite Fund, and it would only fund projects that had social impact. So I think that it's then having a cyclical effect. So it's going back into to the big companies, and they're either spinning out their own startups or they are funding others.
Well, it's certainly a theme that's come up in the series so far, that blockchain, for, let's say, its immaturity and whatever, but it's been credited with forcing people to start changing the conversation. And what I mean by that is, because if you look at the possibilities with technologies like blockchain, you could design a completely different energy system. So the concept of the incumbents just sitting down with a whiteboard and going, God, if we were starting from scratch, it could be very different. Personally, I've seen that as a driving force for change and changing the conversation. Now, that doesn't mean that everyone's suddenly throwing everything out and they're switching over to blockchain tomorrow morning. But it is fascinating to see that it's the one technology that's forced people to start thinking differently. And the other one, and I know you've mentioned this in a couple of other interviews I've seen you do, the rise of electric vehicles could also be a driver for change.
The speed of growth of electric vehicles, and again, I mean, that was due to the efficiencies of the battery technology. But so if you think about the electric vehicles as a standalone thing, you know, people are finding it not only cheaper to run their vehicle, but they also feel, okay, well, I'm not having as negative an impact on the planet. I think, you know, living in London, the pollution here is terrible. And if you see like the school run in the morning and there's just exhaust fumes upon exhaust fumes. And so people are, I think, getting really engaged with that and thinking, you know, I don't want my children breathing this in. And then the other side to it is that you know people who own electric vehicles effectively have this big battery that's outside their house. And there's some really interesting applications to that. So could you charge up your electric vehicle, you know, at a time when energy's cheapest? Could you actually run parts of your house off the battery in your electric vehicle when you're not using it? You know, especially in London, people don't tend to drive very much. So during the week, could you use it to kind of balance your energy use? Could we use entire fleets of electric vehicles in order to balance the grid at peak time? So if you look at something, so a project we were involved in with eCar Club, and you know, if you had a fleet of electric vehicles all up at a charge point, could you kind of charge and discharge them, say, between, you know, 6 and 8 in the evening when the grid's drawing more electricity because everyone's getting home from work? I think there's so many ways in which you can innovate based on external changes that are happening.
Maria, when it comes to a peer-to-peer energy trading platform, my understanding is that when I'm doing trades within a peer-to-peer system today, I can't use normal currency, fiat currency. And what I need to use is a token. Can you explain to us what a token is?
In our case, we have a token that represents our kind of tradable utility. So in this case, it's energy or energy data. And we need to, you know, as we've discussed earlier in the conversation, we need to trade the energy from, you know, house number 29 to house number 30 and record those transactions. But, you know, the guy at number 30 isn't going to stick an envelope through the door with the cash in it. So we need a way of trading that. And that's where our Vlux token comes in. So that's basically all it is. It's just a means of the users on our system trading energy or energy data with one another. And it's as simple as that. I think like blockchain, the kind of concept of tokens maybe puts people off because they get a little bit scared about understanding the intricacies of it. But it's not hugely different from, you know, us being used to, you know, having, you know, tokens for, like, you know, coffee. So buying your Starbucks card or whatever else. It's just a slight adaptation for it. So I do think it's going to become a lot more mainstream in the coming years.
So who's out there today deploying your solutions?
In terms of the trading part of our business, we have kind of two main trials going on that I can talk to. So in Ireland, where we're both from, Ireland's actually going to be the first country to divest from fossil fuels. So that's their aim. And they have a €4 million test bed in Dingle in County Kerry, to look at these new technologies. So we've got a trial happening there, but probably the most well-known one is the trial that we have done in East London. So this is a housing estate. There's 17 big tower blocks, and they crowdfunded the installation of solar panels on the roofs of the buildings. And they, again, the energy is sold back to the grid, so 50% of it deemed export, you get 5p per kilowatt hour. But this time, instead of paying 15 or 16p per kilowatt hour, as we discussed before, a lot of the residents on this estate are actually paying more than that because they're on prepay meters. And so you don't get the kind of direct debit discount or whatever for paying monthly or quarterly. And so with that in mind, you know, you actually have some of the poorest people paying the most for electricity. So it's kind of no wonder we're in a country where we've 2.5 million people living in fuel poverty. So that's why it was really important for us that our, you know, first physical trial of this, you know, was in a social housing community. And we did the first peer-to-peer trade of the of energy on the blockchain in the UK back in April 2018. So that's almost a year ago now. And now we're going into the second phase of the trial where consumers will actually see an upside. So they'll actually be reimbursed for the cheaper energy that they bought. So it is actually happening, albeit within sandboxes, but things are moving forward. There's a huge number of energy trading projects popping up.
When I often mention energy trading and people hear peer-to-peer and I'll trade my energy with my neighbours, some people kind of go, I know someone who trades stocks and shares, and oh God, they're always on their computer or their phone and sell and buy now. What's the user experience like with your solutions?
Someone just wanting to get cheaper energy definitely doesn't want to be bothered with starting to create a crypto wallet or anything else. It does all have to be completely automated. And especially considering like some of these transactions could be pretty small. So the amount of time you'd have to put into it definitely wouldn't be worth it. So it's all completely automated in the back end. And what we want our customer experience to be whenever this does roll out is that, you know, they'll either just automatically have a change in their bill, or in the kind of utopian world, you know, you buy your energy tokens and they get used the same way as you'd buy, you know, prepay for coffee or anything that you would buy a voucher for, you know, getting your Starbucks card or your Oyster card on the tube. So customer experience like has to be absolutely core to what we're designing here. And I think that's the thing that is going to disrupt the energy industry. It's the people who develop solutions that consumers not only need, but they actually want. And that's what we have seen in other industries like banking. So we've seen Monzo and Starling saying, you know, you don't actually need a bank branch. Why would you need that? No one wants to visit the bank. And they've just disrupted it. And now everything's done through an app on your phone. It's absolutely amazing. And I think there's going to be the same thing that happens in energy. You know, we'll really realize what people want and what they don't want. And what they want is cheaper energy without having to think about it.
In the same way, the average person will not care what technology is under the covers. They'll simply want a simple service, get the value they want without having to invest much time or effort. And they may define value as cheaper energy, more convenient, greener energy, whatever. But as for the technology, they simply will not care.
Not at all. And I think that's why I'm excited for Event Horizon this year. I'm starting to, you know, really get a lot of value out of events in this space because we've passed the hype now. And there was this period of time where, you know, you couldn't take two steps in London without there being like a blockchain event on that people were spilling out the doors of. And what I could never really understand about that was that you don't see, you know, accountants all queuing up to an event about spreadsheets. Like that just wouldn't happen. It's a tool that they use to get their job done. And in a similar way, blockchain is an incredible, revolutionary, powerful tool. But it's what is enabling us to get our job done and deliver an amazing customer experience while the customer gets the greatest upside for their energy and energy data. And so I'm excited that a lot of the BS has disappeared, and now we have the quality people who stuck it out and actually had the right use case for the technology that are left. And so the quality of conversations is a lot higher, and we've kind of seen this already from your podcast, and we'll continue to. So it's going to be the next couple of years, I think we're really going to see some leaps forward from some people I have a lot of respect for.
Well, certainly as the hype died down, a lot of the ICOs and startups that popped up 18, 24 months ago have gone away. You know, 18 months ago, I was looking over two or three ICO propositions a week. And I honestly could not see how their value proposition, their business model hung together. And yet they'd go off and raise lots of money through the ICO. So I was beginning to kind of doubt my sanity and if I actually did understand what was going on. But anyway, there's been a big shakeup, which has been good for the industry. Now, Maria, we've covered a lot of topics so far. Before we finish, is there anything we've missed that we want to bring up?
So I think, you know, as was mentioned in episode one, regulation takes a long time to change. And so I think there will be a few more dominoes knocked down, certainly in the UK, which will get us closer. But in that time, the technology is going to continue to evolve. And that's, you know, thanks to people like the Energy Web Foundation, you know, the fact that they're bringing together all energy companies, so everyone from the huge multinationals to startups and scale ups like ourselves, and because everyone is kind of working towards the same goal of trying to create change in the industry through innovation. You know, we've started already testing the EWF system and their blockchain, and we've had our consumption data live on their test network already. And you know, we're continuing to test the light client on our hubs. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that evolves. I think that'll have taken another leap forward in 12 months' time, while the regulation's tittling along in the background.
Maria, thanks a lot for taking the time to have a chat today. I wish you well with your future endeavours, and I hope to see you in Berlin in a couple of weeks.
Thanks very much. I look forward to seeing you in a month or so.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Energy Singularity. Please do give us a review, subscribe to receive future episodes, and please do join the conversation and share your own thoughts with us via social media. You can find details on all our social media accounts in the show notes. And be sure to visit the event site, eventhorizonsummit.com, to find out all the latest and greatest about the upcoming event. And I hope to see you all at the Event Horizon Summit this June in Berlin.